Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. David Bray, Chief Information Officer within the FCC. Also joining our conversation today from IBM is Dave Hathaway. David, would you tell us more about your effort to improve the design and capabilities of the FCC.gov website? Perhaps you could outline your web redesign approach and process. What were some of the challenges you faced, and what are the benefits you've realized thus far?
So when I arrived at the FCC, actually, I was being asked both by folks from the from Congress as well as folks from the administration saying, were we going to fix the website, quote unquote? Because apparently a few years earlier, the website had been designed with very little stakeholder input, very little usability testing, and had basically irked a whole lot of stakeholders. And so we had to figure out, you know, because some of the people were actually saying, could we go back to the old website, which was still also alive? It was transition.fcc.gov, and it was built in HTML 3.2, and the last thing I really wanted to do is go back to HTML 3.2. That said, we had to figure out a way forward. And so what we were really, we had three principles, which was really focusing on one, can we understand the data of what people are actually using? And what we found out was through the data, one, less than 7% of the traffic to FCC.gov was coming in through the homepage, and so we should not just put all of our eggs in the basket for the homepage. We should have other things as well. But we also found that there were other areas for improvements in terms of navigation that the data showed. Two, we wanted to create a big tent where both people from the outside as well as people from the inside could come in, and if they wanted to, they could do card sorting about what are the most important things you're coming to look for the FCC. That actually informed eventually the design we had where you could actually pick, do you want to navigate by bureau and office because some people wanted to do that, or do you want to navigate by function because most members of the public, quite honestly, they don't know the different bureaus and offices. But if you're a big practitioner in the legal profession, you may know the bureaus and offices. So it allows people to pick. But that was where we had people come in. They did card sorting. We also did eye tracking. So where does your eye gravitate to the screen? What colors actually navigate? And so it was actually scientifically based. And then third, we wanted to do a much more agile approach to getting the feedback, but recognizing that ultimately at the end of the goal, it was not designed by committee. It was really designed by science. And actually, we now have metrics that show more than 85% of the visitors to the new website say they prefer it versus the old, which is, I think, a really good metric to have. I mean, aside from the fact that it's good, most people don't go back and say, do you prefer this old website versus the new one? And then two, the other 15%, we asked them, we said, well, what could we improve? And some have had some good feedback, and we actually still are continuing to receive feedback that we're feeding into it. But even before we, quote unquote, launched the website, we had about a six-month period in which we had prototype.fcc.gov that went initially from a static screenshot to usable functionality all along the way. So it wasn't cold turkey, flip the switch, and all of a sudden, now you have to figure out how to use it. And so we're doing the same thing for other systems as well. We have our electronic commenting filing system too, where we know we're creating massive change, not so much in the user interface, but more in just how things get done. And so wherever we can get feedback early and often, as opposed to waiting and doing things cold turkey, that, I think, is the most valuable lesson for what we do at the FCC, which is engage your stakeholders.
And would you tell us more about your efforts in replacing the agency's consumer complaint system? How'd you go about tackling the issue? What were some of the lessons learned in the effort?
So that one, I have to give all credit to the change agents. And it was actually our first real embodiment, because I think up until then, people didn't know what I meant by a change agent. They're like, and actually, I've heard later, people also said they didn't know what I meant by an entrepreneur. And I said, but now they come back and they say, we now understand. So, you know, part of being a leader is you introduce new vocabulary and then you help people figure out what it is. So with the consumer help desk, it was a case where we had a change agent by the name of Dusty Lown, who initially was doing just one day a week at the FCC. He actually had his own startup on the West Coast, and he was willing to come in one day a week and just help us out. And we sort of got him hooked in terms of this was an interesting challenge. We put forward the gauntlet that said, give us a better approach that's not $3.2 million, that is a better approach that won't take 18 months. And it's sort of like, you know, challenge accepted. He was willing to rise to that. He was motivated by that. He shifted from doing one day a week to 3 days a week to eventually 5 days a week, and he actually relocated to the D.C. area so he could have that face-to-face. And with that in the process, basically the negotiation with Dusty was, give me three reasons why we should do this. And he laid out a very good case, which is it's going to be faster times of delivery, it's going to be less expense, and even more important, it's going to be able to scale and be more resilient, which is good because we've now had some things happen at the FCC where that system has had increased demand, but we've had no impact whatsoever because we can scale up or down depending on the cloud volume. But I also asked him, I said, give me three reasons why we shouldn't. And so the three reasons why he shouldn't, he told us, was it's changing the existing processes, it's changing the existing forms, and the stakeholders really like the old system. And so I said, okay, then give me three ways we're going to mitigate it. And so I worked him through with that too, which I said, okay, Dusty, get to a working prototype as quickly as possible. So it gets from being this abstract debate as to whether it's good or bad, so they can actually see it. Two, I said, if anybody complains, send them to me. I'll be the one to listen to them. I mean, I'm going to listen to them out. I'm going to be very polite. But I said, Dusty, your job is to move as quickly as possible to get this released. I'll be the flak jacket. And then finally, the other way we're going to also mitigate it is we're just going to, at a certain point in time, we're just going to flip the switch, you know. And so it was a wonderful example of putting in practice all those culture change, the human dimension, as well as empowering a team member and then actually heralding when he was successful and saying all credit goes to Dusty, because then that allowed us to actually get other talent. I mean, as a result, Dusty was successful. We ended up with about seven or eight other change agents who signed up right afterwards because they saw here was an environment in which they could actually see change that matters and actually get it done in public service.
So shifting gears a little bit, cybersecurity. The FCC IT's highest priority is a safe, secure environment for performing the commission's mission. With rising cyber threats, what's being done to strengthen the FCC IT posture in cybersecurity?
So that's probably the thing that keeps all CIOs up at night because we know the nature of the internet is a very challenging one. So I would say on cybersecurity, partly why we did the move to the cloud and commercial service providers is we just could not provide the extent of IT security by ourselves if we did everything on-premise. I know a lot of people, there's still some CIOs that will say, well, clearly if it's on-premise, you can do it better. And I was like, well, no, actually, I only have 750 people at the FCC. Of that, I only have about 400 that are doing IT. Even if I took all 400 people, that will not match the investment of several large consumer clouds in terms of their IT security professionals, and they can also pay their people more. Yes, I have an interest and I have due diligence to make sure that what is being offered and provided by the consumer commercial offerings match what we need. And we need to have some penetration testing and make sure we have scans in place. But in terms of actual using the advantages of scale, moving to a commercial cloud environment actually gets me many, many more IT security professionals than I could possibly ever get to the FCC. And it's actually then it's alignment of both the private sector's interest, which is obviously they want to do business and be reliable, and it's also our interest, which is we want to have that secure environment. Mm-hmm. And so that at the time, I think when I first came forward with that about 2 years ago, I think a lot of people thought I was a heretic, which usually means I'm doing my thing. But now I think more and more you're seeing, I mean, we know already, DoD recently actually has now a commercial service cloud offering for the Nippernet. We're seeing more and more departments and agencies recognize that really, with few exceptions, the commercial cloud solutions, if done right, will be more secure than anything we could do on-premise.
So how are you fostering a culture of risk-taking and experimentation while also taking seriously the consequences of both? And what challenges have you encountered in fostering such a culture?
So we definitely want people to take risk. We obviously want most of those risks to also work, which is always a challenge because, you know, if you're taking a risk, it's not going to necessarily work. So I think the solution we have is for things that are particularly risky, make sure you, one, have different backup plans. And so that's why I always ask people, what are three reasons why we should do this, but also three reasons why we shouldn't and how we're going to mitigate it. So make sure you have backup plans. But then two, make sure if it's a risk, make sure you can pivot quickly. And I think these are the same lessons that you see in Silicon Valley, which is if something's not working, don't fall prone to the sunk cost bias and keep pouring more money into it. If it's not working, pivot quickly. And make sure you have good communication, both laterally and then up the chain, so if we need to make an adjustment, we can do it real quickly. The other thing that we've also done that has been really successful at the FCC is we do what's called the boardwalk meetings. And what is that? Well, when I first arrived, I actually put outside my office, I put a big chart and say, what are our strengths, our weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, the SWOT analysis. And I invited everyone, if they wanted to, they could show up and they could write whatever they wanted. They could do it after hours. It was meant to be a chance for anyone to share anonymously what they thought. And I found, interestingly enough, that nobody took the time to write on the board, but they sent the time to email me what their thoughts were so I could put on the board for them. And I was like, this is odd. What's going on here? And what I found out was my predecessors, apparently there had been some cases where some of my predecessors had shouted publicly at people as to why they were wrong on certain issues. And so nobody actually wanted to step forward and share a view for fear of being shouted in public. And I was like, I'm not going to shout at you. That's not my belief structure. So I had to model for the team that it was okay to raise different views and they weren't going to be shouted out. And so we started the boardwalk, which was on Mondays and Thursdays for 20 minutes, just for 20 minutes. We have this big chart that has the top 10 things we're doing at the FCC. We have the owner of the issue, so it would be someone other than myself. We have what are any things that's going on with it? Are there any concerns? Are there any fixes? And what's the next milestone? And we basically just ask them to get up and actually do a quick 2 to 3 minute presentation about what they're doing. And the first time we did this about 2 years ago, people were unsure about this. And I said, well, this will be a chance to just sort of share what you're doing, have everyone hear it. And if there needs to be made a decision now, we can do it. But now those are one of our most widely attended events. So it starts at 11:30. So 11:25, nobody's there. By 11:30, all of a sudden it swarms to being about 50 or 60 people. Not everyone's present because some people are working. We're also streaming them so you can also watch them on your desktop. But people show up. We cap it to 20 minutes. So if you don't get everything done in 20 minutes, then we stop and we'll say we'll pick this back up the next Thursday or next Monday. But it really is a situational awareness where it's okay for us to say this calling thing is not working out. Do we need to do something about it? Do we need to have someone else coordinate on it? And most recently, there's been cases where people will raise issues and someone will say, I can help with that, or they'll sort of group swarm. And so it's a shared boardwalk. But what's also interesting is we've also evolved a set of rituals after the 20 minutes. So when the 20 minutes ends, the team actually started doing visual thank yous to people that have been a creative problem solver in the last week. Someone actually brought a Tyrannosaurus Rex and called him a Thankosaurus Rex. And the goal is whoever gets the Thankosaurus Rex, it was recognizing for what they do, but the next week they have to give it to somebody else. But you also have to decorate the T-Rex. And so the T-Rex has now gotten some interesting costume designs. We also have a Simper Gumby. We have a Gumby figure, and that's for the one that's the most flexible and things like that. Yeah. So we've developed these rituals that I think to me is just great because it's the team talking to each other. It's not just a team talking to me. And I can step back and I can see they're having conversations. And so I think the way we've really addressed risk is by constant communication amongst each other, constant problem solving, and it's a shared team activity as opposed to an individual activity.
So data analytics. Government executives are demonstrating measurable improvements in programs by integrating data-based analytics in decision-making. So can you share with us a bit on how you're using analytics to not only improve service quality, but also to identify new solutions, new services for the FCC?
Right. So I would say there's probably two dimensions of what we're doing with data. The first is this year we're going to be very intentional about rolling out some products that will allow sort of do-it-yourself business intelligence for others at the FCC. And we've already had one success with our Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau. Now we have some other bureaus saying it. In fact, I found that as we start rolling it out, it's almost like everybody wants it now. And I'm like, oh, well, success breeds more success, I guess, but or more demand. So that's going to empower our end users to be able to visualize, see data both on the private, in the FCC side, but also on the public side as well. Because really, IT should not be in the business of actually designing those business analytics for them. Mm-hmm. And it's being done in a way that actually we can have confidence that the right people are using the right data in the right format. So that's the first one. So it's do-it-yourself business analytics. The second one is behind the scenes, now that we've done Operation Server Lift, we can actually get much more granular metrics about utilization across our servers. We actually have already been able to retire 22 different racks mm-hmm. because we could actually say, well, those servers aren't needed anymore, things like that. And so by moving to a commercial service provider, that actually forces us to clean house so we have a better sense of our infrastructure. We've also implemented an approach where when I first arrived, actually, there was no visibility into our service center in terms of the calls that people were receiving, the nature of the calls. And now we actually have a breakdown by hour in terms of the volume of calls received, volume of calls solved, as well as the nature by day in terms of the context of the calls. And we're actually mapping that to previous weeks and previous days. And so you can say an average Monday in the FCC looked like this. We're either above or below that. We can ask a question of why. We can see the weekly trend. And so that's actually serving as an early diagnostic tool. If something's going on across the bureaus and offices, where in the past it might take enough calls and then someone pieces it together, we can actually use a data-driven approach to say something may be going on, maybe it's a patch you applied, maybe something else that rolled out. You can actually have that information feed from our consumer, sorry, from our internal help desk to feed better service to our stakeholders.
That's great. And David, what is crowdsourcing and how are you folks using it?
So crowdsourcing is there are certain ways you can design challenges or problems to be solved in such a way that they benefit from having many more eyes or many more approaches or views on them. And so at the FCC, we launched the FCC Speedtest app about 2 years ago. And that was an example of, in the past, we were paying for installations in homes, installations in cars that actually test broadband signal strength, Wi-Fi signal strength. And by making it an open source app, we could actually invite the public, if they wanted to participate and actually feed into that and actually share data anonymously. Now, we made it by design that you could look at the app, you could look at the code, and you could see by design, since the code was open source, we don't know who you are within a 5-mile radius, and we don't know your IP address. So it's almost like privacy baked in by design. We made the code open source to actually allow anyone to look at it, and as a result, by making it open source as opposed to closed door, we actually, for a while, were the fourth most downloaded app on the iOS store. So that was actually a first for public service. And so I think that shows that the public is hungry to do things that in the past government had to do because it just, I mean, packet latency in the 1700s was 3 days by horseback, and that was one way. You know, we're not in an age anymore. So I think that's why I'm intentional about using public service, because I think there are things that in the past government had to do just because we didn't have the connectivity that you can make available to the public if they want. I mean, if you look at it in some respects, representative democracy is crowdsourcing. And so you can actually put things forward and have the public get involved to actually help out with solving some of these harder problems. We also hope, you know, obviously when we're looking at design of the website, but other functionalities too with the new electronic commenting filing system, that by crowdsourcing inputs and feedbacks, it will actually be better than any one person could do by themselves.
What emerging technologies hold the most promise for improving the work done by the FCC? We will ask its CIO, Dr. David Bray, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.